I'm going to say a few words about the primary teaching. If some of my colleagues who self-define as double belongers, they are people of deep devotion to the Buddha Dharma, but they're also people of faith in other traditions and Judeo-Christian traditions. And they sometimes describe the teaching of emptiness as being ultimate. If we had to find an ultimate insight in Buddhism, it would be this teaching of sunyata, or emptiness. And it's a teaching that I so appreciate revisiting again and again, because for many of us, it can be quite elusive. It's so interesting how the most profound insights have a way of disappearing. Not for all of us, but for many of us. I'll speak for myself. I'm very aware. I was introduced to this teaching early in life, and often it's the very last insight that I return to when I'm in need of some insight. And as a way of offering you a little bit of context, this teaching is supported by a Buddhist understanding of what causes us to suffer. Many of us, as we've explored and as you've been exploring with your other teachers, have a tendency to struggle. Right? These minds, as we've talked about, are so very complex. And our experience in relationship to ourselves and to others tends similarly to be very, very complex, very complicated. And so it makes sense that we have this almost habituated tendency to suffer or to get caught in suffering. And there are many ways to understand why that's so. Right? And as many of you know, I'm also a clinician, I'm a psychoanalyst, and so I have a tendency to appreciate both a Buddhist understanding of suffering and a psychological one. And this teaching of emptiness is so psychologically helpful. And so I'm delighted to have a chance to explore it with you today. So before we get to the awareness of emptiness, it can be useful to first conceptualize what it is that tends to generate suffering. Right? And from a Buddhist perspective, as many of you know and have been contemplating, we have this propensity for suffering because of the way the mind tends to misperceive what's happening. Right? In the Dharma, this is referred to as a fundamental misperception of reality. That just keeps happening again and again, so that life can start to feel like a little bit of a fun house, right? Where everything's just a little bit distorted. And for those of you who are very reflective, for those of you who have a tendency to review or think about your experience, you might be aware of a little bit of a gap, right, between what you're experiencing as certainly and absolutely true and real, and the possibilities for what's actually happening. Right? There's often this gap. And from a Buddhist point of view, that gap is caused by the tendency of the mind to impute inherent characteristics or qualities into ourselves and to other people, into all of our experiences, into our history, into our future. It goes on and on, right? All phenomena. But the mind, and I think from a psychological perspective, this is because we're trying to feel oriented, right? We're trying to contact our psychic GPS and have a sense of where we're going and where we've been. Because there's nothing more distressing than feeling lost. Right? Freud talked about this and the Buddha talked about this endlessly. Right? We don't like to feel disoriented. And as a result, the mind has a way of coming up with a sense of orientation that involves investing these characteristics in our, again, ourselves, other people, all phenomena. Right? It's a way of feeling like we basically understand what's going on, we know who we are, we know who other people are, and therefore we feel a little more protected. We feel a little safer. Does that make sense? Yeah. The only problem is these characteristics that we're typically investing ourselves with and others with, again, tend not to hold the full truth. Right? They tend to leave out aspects of who we are, who others are, and aspects of our own history, right, as we're reviewing where we've been. And again, this tendency to want to feel oriented is so well developed, it's so powerful, that the difficulty is that we often start to feel a conviction about who we are and who others are. And this was the Buddha's great insight. It's not just that the mind has a tendency to fundamentally misperceive reality. It's that we then feel this complete conviction about the truth of that misperception. And you can see there's a little bit of a difference there, right? It's one thing to have some sense of, yes, I know who I am. I've been paying attention. I notice my capacities, my gifts. I notice my flaws. I notice my personal limitations. Yeah, I know. I've been paying attention. And then it's another thing to be so certain that anything that might challenge that perception is warded off. Yeah. So from a psychological point of view, we sometimes talk about organizing principles, right? The relational analysts offered the insight that often during a very early stage of life, before we know we have a mind, before we're able to be reflective, before we have language, we're learning about ourselves based on who's reflecting back to us who we are. And we're learning about the world through whomever is mediating the world. And then we're developing conviction or beliefs, right, about those realities that are then very hard to challenge, right? They're hard to get to because they set in so early and they set in before we have all this reflective capacity. Now, interestingly, the Buddha Shakyamuni said something very similar. He just opened up the frame from the infant and the infant's parents to countless lives, right? So many other parents who might have been on board and many other circumstances that create imprints in the mind, right? Little seeds in the mind that then ripen and become a way of organizing our reality. Yeah. So the teaching of emptiness is thought to be the antidote, right, the medicine that we need for this tendency. And one of the many things that I so appreciate about this tradition is all of the great teachers encourage people just to test things out, right? To check to see what helps you when you're suffering. And so you can read about the teaching of emptiness, right? And I love going to teachings on emptiness to help me revisit and remember. But really what's most helpful is just to check to see. When you're in the throes of conviction, and maybe you can even call to mind now something that you are currently having conviction about. Last week we talked about the difficult sister. It could be any circumstance, right? It could be personal, it could be social, it could be political, right? Anything that is generating discomfort, distress, right? A diseased mind that you have absolute conviction about, right? The mind has decided what's causing that distress. And if you're like me, you might have been revisiting this again and again so that you're getting clearer and clearer about your conviction. Apparently, I love to do this, and I... It's entertaining on a certain level because you're really fine-tuning the fantasy. Right? And so it can be very, very captivating. Right? You're getting clearer and clearer about the people involved, their histories and what led to the suffering, this problem, this discord. Those moments when things could have turned around, but they didn't. I mean, we play it out. Right? It's very tempting. Yeah. Sometimes we think of that as rumination, right? The mind revisiting again and again. But if you just call something to mind, it's interesting just to take a few moments to imagine that nothing about the situation is fixed in nature. Nothing about the situation will defy the truth of how things will invariably change. Even if the change is subtle, right? Even if it's some unexpected interaction, some unexpected capacity that you connect with, some unexpected change in a circumstance or a condition. It's very interesting to notice then what happens to the mind. And again, this can be subtle, right? Because most of us suffer quite a bit and sometimes very acutely. And so the last thing I want to do is minimize, right, the impact of that suffering. I join you in it. I appreciate it. And I respect. I respect how much we suffer. Right? And this is also an origin point for this tradition. The Buddha Shakyamuni said, I have only one thing to teach. Suffering and its end. Suffering and its end. By which he meant, I continue to imagine, that it's so helpful just to notice the nature of our suffering, right? Notice what generates our distress, our fear, our anxiety, our depression, our aloneness. Right, whatever your suffering might be, and then see what it's like to reorient toward what might alleviate that distress. And the Buddha wanted to suggest what will definitely alleviate the distress, what's a reliable antidote, is the awareness that everything lacks, right, any permanent nature. Everything about us, and that certainly includes the body, right? And often if you're you're beginning to explore teachings on no self, you'll hear a lot of reference to the body, right? How we tend to invest the body with a sense of identity, right? We are the body. We get very identified with the body, right? Which is why if there's the tiniest change to the body, it can be very distressing, right? Ugh, something on my arm. It wasn't there yesterday. Ugh, you know, what does that mean about who I am and what's going to happen to me? Right, so there's a very powerful feeling of investing the body with inherent meaning. And for those of us, I'll make a generalization. For those of us who are older than, say, 40, we have a lot of experience with the body changing. And as challenging as that can be, it's also very illuminating, right? Because we begin to see, actually, we aren't the body, right? We are so much more than the body. And that this body is empty too, right? It's empty of any permanent abiding characteristic. It's empty of anything that won't change. Does that make sense? Okay, great. So one of the tricky things about sunyata, or the teachings of emptiness, is the word itself can evoke feelings, and sometimes it can evoke a sense of loss, right? A sense of annihilation, right? What does this mean, emptiness, that we're not real, that our bodies aren't real, that our feelings aren't real, that our relationships aren't real? And again, I appreciate that response because it is a very subtle but extremely powerful teaching. And so with subtle teachings, there's a lot of room for misinterpretation, right? And so the teaching of emptiness affirms that indeed it's important to appreciate our conventional reality. Right, these bodies have been carrying us through life, right? They're so important. Our relationships offer opportunities for insight, for healing, for learning. Structures, right? Structures are important. We have this room, we have this building, etc., etc. And all of these phenomena that I've just listed, bodies, relationships, structures, will change, right? They're all empty of anything permanent, anything abiding. Now, lastly, before I pause to hear from you, I have found this teaching to be extraordinarily helpful when it comes to personal suffering. Right? Classically, this teaching is offered as a spiritual teaching, right? A way to bolster our spiritual development, right? To really taste the truth of reality. And I'm all for it. That's been very helpful for many, many people, and I sense it will continue to be helpful. Equally, this teaching is extremely freeing when it comes to personal difficulty and suffering. Because again, the mind is trying to get the lay of the land, right? And all of the great clinicians, and I would say especially the clinicians who are also people of faith and people with conscious spirituality really appreciate that is part of how we survive, right? We learn as much as we can about the systems that we're in, the families that we are growing up in, the cultures that hold those families, the moments in history that hold those families, etc. So our minds work extremely hard to try to learn as much as possible about where we are in this world and what's needed for survival, right? Part of this is evolutionary, right? We have this push, right? It's a body-based push. It's also a psychic push to try to glean as much as possible about what we need to cope and survive. And so a lot of these tendencies to invest inherent meaning or permanent characteristics in our experience is in the spirit of survival, right? This is why we're paying attention very carefully when we're young. We're learning as much as possible about how we're loved or not, what are the behaviors that will elicit that love, and what are the behaviors that will surely destroy, right, destroy its presence. And that learning is extremely important. It's just that it leaves a gap, right? It will surely leave a gap between what we're personally experiencing and learning about and the truth of reality. Yeah. And so when we're personally reviewing whatever's going on that's creating suffering, it can be so helpful just to imagine, as we did in our meditation, that there's a part of the mind that is clear, right? That is very open, spacious, empty, right? Again, it doesn't mean that it's not real. It just means that it's fluid, right? And it's receptive to reality and whatever reality might be holding. And then to imagine that layer of the mind that's spacious and open and fluid, beginning to hold the experiences you're having that feel like they're not going to budge. And they're not going to budge because you're certain, right? You're certain about what's involved. And again, I know sometimes this can be tricky to touch into in a genuine way, right? Conceptually, it makes a lot of sense when we're going through something difficult or acutely painful. Of course, we all want relief. There's nothing we want more, right? It's just that the mind can sometimes reach out for that relief to responses that will not offer it. And the Buddha wanted to suggest a reliable source of relief is the felt truth of emptiness. That everything about us is fluid, will change, including the parts of ourselves that we don't like, or really sometimes can't stand, right? There are parts of us that we just want to get rid of. We want to evacuate those parts, put them somewhere. Everything about us is informed by the truth of emptiness. It's fluid. It will definitely change, right? And this is the Buddha's teaching, independence upon changing causes and conditions. Right, as our minds change, our relationships will change. As our environments change, our experience will change, etc. Yeah. And so lastly, because I really would love to hear from you now, I want to invite you to very patiently experiment with this teaching. And perhaps simply to imagine that when you're aware that your suffering is reaching a certain intensity that we might describe as intolerable, right? When it's really gathering some momentum. To see what it's like, just to allow for the awareness of how this suffering might change. How it's empty of anything that will defy the reality of impermanence.